to Keldabe Talk Radio, the official podcast of the Mandalorian Mercs. We're a costume organization dedicated to charity efforts around the globe, attending events in Mandalorian armor we've built by hand. Here on the show, we'll keep you up to date with the latest fan community news. Visit our website at www.mandalorianmercs.com.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Keldabe Talk Radio. I am your host, Crow, and with me as always is Thaxos.
Hey.
Frost.
What's up, everybody?
And a special guest we have from down in the BBC, because I still don't know how to pronounce your clan. We have Misha Kitty from the forums. Hello, Misha.
Hello.
All right. So we actually have a pretty good amount of stuff to talk about this time, but we'll just start with some real basic questions for Misha. So, Misha, just a couple quick questions, because a lot of this stuff is going to be answered in our Facebook question and answer section later. But what got you, like, how'd you find out about the Mercs, and how'd you, you know, decide, yeah, that's what I want to do with my weekends?
Well, I had seen the forums, and I had kind of poked around on it for a couple of years, but I didn't really join up or anything, because I wasn't quite sure exactly what I wanted to do. And I was going to do an event. It was actually my wedding vow renewal, and my husband had this big joke when we got married. He really wanted to have a Star Wars wedding, and his parents and my parents said no way. So our joke was, if we made it to 5 years, it would be a Star Wars vow renewal. And we made it to 5 years, and so he decided that he wanted to do a Jedi, and he also really wanted to join the Rebel Legion. And I was poking around, and, you know, nothing in the 501st was something that I really wanted to do, and the Rebel Legion was really just, they're the good guys, and it was not my scene. And a friend of mine reminded me about the Bounty Hunters, and I went back on the forums and was looking at some of the kits and just knew that that was exactly where I would be happy. Why be good or bad when you can be either?
And so you do a lot of stuff for the Mercs. It's kind of why you got the Ori Ramacad a little while ago. What do you do within our organization? What are your little roles?
Generally anything you all need. I am the Virilor for my clan, so that means that I'm sort of the second in command, and mostly what I do is I help out with a lot of the merchandise. So whenever we do patch runs or coins or t-shirts, I help out with a lot of that. I also, because the BVC is a really big clan here in Florida, I think we just hit 57 members the other day, so I do a lot to try to help new members when they first come in, to welcome them and get them kind of aware of different types of events and how all that works. For the Mercs themselves, I'm on the PR team and I help a lot with the social media. So I get photos for Facebook and I help write articles for Battlecry and just general stuff like that.
Sweet.
Misha, how did you pick your Mandalorian's name?
I am a huge, huge, huge nature geek, and I'm a science nerd by day. My job involves working outdoors, and I get to be around wildlife and do all crazy sorts of things in nature. So I'm a huge fan of birds and snakes and creepy crawly things. And when I decided to go with the Night Owl helmet, I thought it was so cool that the visor shape is just 100% patterned off of a type of owl that we have here in North America called the barn owl. And so my name, because the whole idea of the kit was sort of ice, the name comes from Nyctia, which is one of the names for the snowy owl. So that's how you get like the ice and the snow in there. And then Alba, which is the species name for the barn owl, and it means white. So kind of the white owl. So huge science geek out moment there, sorry. But yeah.
Better story than mine.
And I do gotta wonder, I was wondering whether or not your kit was sort of snow themed. But like, you're from Florida. What makes you want to do a snow themed kit in a state that's afraid of snow?
Right. Yeah, we're not afraid of snow. We just, you know, we just don't bother with it because having year-round summer is way more awesome. So what happened with my kit was at the time, because I was trying to get it ready for my vow renewal, I didn't have time to build my kit myself. So Hydra had offered to help. And when she and I were talking about kind of color schemes and everything, she gave me a couple different options. And the color scheme that I picked, I have my kind of other life. I have several of them. I run a dance group, and our colors are white and that really pretty turquoise blue and then silvers and blacks. And so I told her that, and I said, you know, is there any way that we could work those colors in? And she said, oh, yeah, absolutely. So when I got my little box that was about a foot by a foot with my armor crammed into it, and I opened it up and I saw the colors in there, I kind of, as sort of a nod to her and the fact that her recognizable kit is snow, I based mine on ice. So it came that way with the colors, and then I just sort of, when I was putting together all the soft parts and dyeing the fabric for all of it, I kind of went with the whole ice idea. It makes no sense because it's in Florida, but it just, I don't know, I kind of got this whole backstory with carbonite and everything, and it just seemed like fun. You know,
the
deep
only
down...
only Floridian snow, Mando.
No, there's another one. And deep down, no, there is a snow. There's a snow and an ice. And deep down inside, you know, I'm longing for snow, so maybe someday.
Well, there's plenty of snow in Canada and Maine, so yep. You just need to travel up to one of the northern cons.
Like the yep. Mando Road Tour, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
That would be awesome.
And you can grab all of the other southern snow Mandos along the way, because it seems like all of the people that don't have snow have a snow-themed Mando. And everybody that lives up with snow doesn't have anything snow-themed.
A friend of mine who used to live in a very cold place and hates snow always tells me that the reason we think snow is so awesome is because we never had to shovel it or live with it, or, you know, deal with dirty snow or slipping on it or having any sort of horrible snow stories. So that's
clearly
probably...
clearly your friend needs to invest in a snowblow.
So you've been around a couple of years with the Mercs. What would you say your favorite event has been?
Oh, that's really tough. I'm not, you know, it's funny. I'm not really a big fan of conventions because I'm not really into just hanging out on the con floor and kind of getting pushed around and, you know, not... I like to troop for charities. I love...
Get out.
I like to troop when I know that my presence being there is helping someone out. Like, if it's raising money or if it's for, like, you know, like, little kids at a Cub Scout event or something. But I will say that even though that's my favorite type of troop to do, the best part for me is really the Mercs have really become my family, and the events that I get to go to where I get to see even the people that are on the other side of the state of Florida that I don't get to see very often, those for me, even if it's a con and, you know, not really too excited about some of the stuff that happens at a con, but getting to see the people and the members of my family are really, that's my favorite thing. So MegaCon this past year, when you and Dar showed up and surprised me, that was probably the highlight of my year. That was amazing.
Yeah, that was definitely a lot of fun. I didn't mean to set up the question like that. I figured you were going more with the charity stuff.
No, sure. Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny because I love the charity stuff. That's why I troop. It really and truly is. But yeah, when I troop here locally, really with maybe one or two other exceptions, it's usually just me as a Merc. Because even though Florida has 57 Mercs, we're spread all over the place.
Well, and your state's like 900 miles long, too. It's just bent in the middle.
Exactly 900 miles. And if you want to cross, you have to go through alligator-infested swamps, quicksands. Now we have boa constrictors and pythons running around.
And so worst of all, Orlando.
Yes, yeah. Tourists, Canadian tourists in particular. It's really, hey, really bad.
No, I'm can sorry. Attest. Canadian tourists are terrible.
Yeah, they're so impolite.
We're sorry.
But really, that was...
And they're just always like, no, it's not our fault, ever, for any reason. We'll never apologize.
Yep. Those are Canadians, all right.
Yep.
We have a Christmas parade that the BBC has been doing for, oh man, I think easily 4 or 5 years now. And that was, it wasn't my first event, but that was really the first event where I met a large number of Mercs, and that has become one of my favorites too, because that's kind of when the whole family gets together, and it's sort of neat because it's around the holidays at a time when you would be meeting people and seeing people that you haven't seen in a while too, and it's just really, really cool to get to be with everybody at that time too.
Definitely, yeah. The large get-together groups for the Mercs, whatever event it is definitely probably the best part. Besides the charity, of course, as you said.
And yeah, speaking of charity and Mercs news, biggest thing to happen to the Mercs lately just happened last week. The IRS officially told the Mercs that we are now an approved 501c4 charitable organization. We were a 501c3, and now, if the order of numbers is correct, and it might not be because it's the IRS, we've just been upgraded in our charitable status.
That's not quite how that works, but we have changed status.
Does anybody here actually know any real, like, tax law that makes that different?
It has to do with the type of organization. 501c3s and versus 501c4s, what they can and cannot do with the monies they collect and how they use those funds. 501c4s are civic leagues or associations, and they generally are kind of for social welfare.
Mm-hmm.
Or they have a membership.
Yeah, well, and 501c3s, I believe, are actually technically incorporated.
Yes, like, and they're usually like a public charity or a private foundation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do know that there were, under the 501c3 thing, there were certain limits as to how much we could raise and when and that sort of stuff. Just, you know, just little red tape sort of stuff. I know that 501c4s, most of that goes away. So we can pretty much raise as much money as we want, as long as it is still for non-profit, for charity, and all that good stuff.
Yeah, the MMCC is now a recognized tax-exempt non-profit organization, not a charity. So we've been classified as a 501c4 social welfare / civic league designation.
That is the legal word. But yeah, basically what that means for us, as an organization, is that we can now do even more good, as on top of what we're already doing, because that just makes it much easier for us as an organization that is now almost at 1,000 official members to just go and do what we do.
It also gives us legitimacy in the eyes of a lot of other organizations.
Mm.
I know that when I've reached out to certain charity groups, they've kind of responded back and said, oh, you know, we don't really know who you are. We're not really sure about this whole Star Wars thing. And when we can talk from the sort of the angle of being a 501c4 and explain what it is we do, that definitely helps out.
Absolutely.
Well, and additionally, I believe this also makes us the first Star Wars costume club to hit 501c4. Because we were the first one to hit 501c3.
More than likely.
I think so.
Hmm.
Well, we were the first one to be a 501c3 charitable organization. I remember Tom specifically saying that repeatedly, incessantly, over and over again. Though I think the 501st may have since gone and gotten that status, but
501st is a 501c7, it looks like.
Okay.
I have no idea what that means.
I'm not sure on C7. Yeah. C10 is a fraternity.
Well, it means that we're all charitable, and that's awesome.
Yes, that's really to raise money for things.
That's really
which means,
the
Mandos,
the whole
you should start doing your ice bucket challenges.
I've done mine.
I've gotten challenged to mine. I'm going to have to do it at Dragon Con.
I keep getting challenged, and it keeps raining. And standing in the rain soaking yourself with ice water isn't really the same as standing dry.
I don't know, man.
And
that's what you should just do. You should stand out in the rain in armor, look like you're crying or something, and then just play a sad song.
Just let the bucket fill up with rainwater and then just dump that on you.
I mean, that's what Ficker did, is he filled up all of his helmet poles that he had sitting around with ice water and did all of them in his ODST outfit. I was like, okay, man, that's pretty hardcore.
Yeah, we had, I forget who it was, but on Tumblr, we reblogged somebody who had done their ice bucket challenge in full kit and everything like that, so...
Yeah, I think Dresden and an unofficial did an ice bucket challenge in full armor.
Yes, I believe they did.
Yeah, and, well, there's been a whole bunch of mercs that are doing it.
Oh, yeah.
Which is awesome. Yeah, the important part is it's getting the awareness out, and then people are also donating to that charity.
Yeah. In other mercs news, we have a new Order of the Oriramacad inductee for the month of August. This time, again, because Tobias isn't here, I'm the one that gets to butcher names, but we have Seth Duncan, a.k.a. Marut Nast of Krait Clan out in Utah.
That hurt to hear.
Woo!
Yeah, I know, right?
It hurt to say. But basically, from the blurb here, Seth is just an extremely knowledgeable guy when it comes to building armor, and he has dedicated himself to helping out everybody who has joined or is trying to join Krait Clan pretty much since he joined up and became the Ruzalor of Krait Clan. He's just dedicated himself to making sure that everybody around him, you know, looks their best and has the best armor that they can make. He's just a very dedicated member, and that is why. And that's what you gotta do if you wanna be Order of Oriramacad.
You gotta be dedicated, and you gotta look pretty.
Yes. Those are the two criteria.
I mean, just look at Misha.
Yeah.
Aww.
Misha.
Very sweet.
My wife.
No, I'm not.
I'm right here, guys. No.
Yeah, I mean, there are exceptions. There are exceptions.
Yeah, there has to be a rule. There has to be an exception, because that's how you prove the rule.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly, yeah. But congratulations to Seth. Well-earned, well-deserved.
Yes, very much so.
Welcome to the Order.
Moving on to Star Wars news. The big thing that, at least for me, the only thing that I actually really paid attention to was Star Wars Rebels. They actually gave the first 10 minutes of an episode for everybody to watch, and that was a whole lot of fun. But they also gave Sabine a short, like the Art Attack short, that was just her. No other Rebels characters are even in it. And
I was actually a big fan of the Chopper short. That was pretty fun.
I never saw the Chopper short. I forget which one was first. Was it the Chopper one?
I think it's the Chopper one, but the Chopper one is excellent.
Didn't Zeb also get his own short?
Yeah, Zeb got one recently. Now. Yeah.
There's also been a lot of Star Wars Rebels merchandise cropping up. I've noticed a lot of books.
Yep.
And not just Meet the Rebels kind of books, but some other ones too that have been fleshing out some of the characters for kids, which I thought was kind of cool.
Yeah.
Well,
like
additionally, we also have. We also actually have our first Star Wars Rebels approved member, I believe, don't we?
Yep.
We do. Yep. She is part of our clan down here in Florida.
Well, aren't you special?
Yeah, we are, actually.
Well, the only thing that gets me, and I know that this happens a lot with a lot of the canon costumes and a lot of the ones that are, you know, cross-listed for clubs, but what took so long? Because there have been a bunch of pretty good Sabines out there already.
You know, that's a really good question, and I'm not sure, because I've seen some other ones too, and I don't know if it's just that people haven't been submitting, or maybe they didn't know that they could submit or to submit, but I know that she was at a convention, and I believe a few of our members met her and encouraged her to submit her costume, and she did.
Mm.
Part of what it likely was is that the app team was still working on having something ready for the CRLs. You know, based on despite there being some some screenshots. There have been other people that had already made Sabine costumes at this point, but in terms of getting approved in the Mercs, they needed to have sufficient references to create a solid set of CRLs for people to use to get approved.
Is that true for G-Canon, though? I thought that we referred to old G-Canon sources as equal in merit. So, like, the fact that there aren't three independent references for the Boba Fett from Return of the Jedi is made up for the fact by him being in Return of the Jedi.
Yeah, for the most part, that's how we treat it. But, I mean, I'm just saying, like, in general, whether or not... Because half the time that when we have a costumer who comes in with a costume that we don't have a specific CRL for, half the time, if their costume looks good enough, they become the CRL template.
Yeah. Which I believe is what happened with her.
Yeah.
I think that's the case. Again, the AF team still has to work on a CRL, you know, despite...
Sure.
You know, someone can come in with this awesome new costume of the new character, but the CRL team still has to...
Yeah, they still have to go through the process
of creating the CRLs. So
and another thing... Another thing to keep in mind, too, is that character, they changed her look a little bit.
They have.
Because the initial images that we saw of her, she was very pink. And I know that when I was trooping at Star Wars Weekends in my Jedi, please don't kill me, but the Disney, the official Disney girl that was in Sabine armor, it was almost purple. It was actually really surprising how off the colors were. And I don't know if... My understanding is a lot of times with CGI type stuff, they'll do a test market and they'll see how it will test with audiences. And, you know, if the pink didn't go over well, maybe they switched it to purple. I'm not sure why that change was made, but it was quite different than what we had been seeing in the early shots.
I think what it was is a lot of the reference images and a lot of the teaser photos kind of had the colors boosted. Yeah. Because in the first episode of Rebels,
it's pretty dark.
It's a lot more muted at colors on Sabine's kit.
Yeah.
Which is excellent, by the way.
It's just excellent.
It's just excellent.
It's just
right.
Excellent. I mean, I can end it there. Nope, that's why. I mean, sort of, I guess we can go off topic a little bit here, but like I see that all the time, especially with Bo-Katans.
Yes.
We have like one in the Mercs, maybe. But the 501st has a ton.
That's something that I've found really interesting too, because I've had a couple of people that I've met along the way, and they have bows, and I've said, "Hey, have you applied?" And they've said, "Well, we tried to, but the CRLs were different, and we couldn't get in." And I've always found that.
See, now that shouldn't be the case, because for all the cross-listed costumes, we always treat them as the same.
Because
I know that's how we treat Boba and Jango.
The Mercs try and replicate the 501st CRLs as much as possible, because if. And the working theory is that if it's good enough for the 501st, we don't want to make our CRLs so different that they then have to they can't be in both groups at the same time.
Right. And that makes total sense.
Right.
But additionally speaking, their CRLs, let's be real here, their CRLs are designed to be less permissive than ours are simply because they are doing a character. You are doing Boba Fett. You are doing Jango Fett.
Well, that's what gets me. Like if you're in the 501st, like if anything, our CRLs are more lenient. And
well, that's going to start changing because in fact, I believe the Sabine CRLs are being used by the 501st.
Well, and our CRLs
are being used by the 501st, so there should be some more, you know, cross-club compatibility right there, which is kind of nice to see, though, that we're leading in that regard as opposed to following.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'd love to see that. So, I mean, moral of that story is we need more Bo-Katans. We need more Sabines. Just...
We should get to it.
Yeah, if you're hearing this, sign up. You can totally get in. We want you.
I'm actually helping a friend of mine build a bow, so I'll get on that.
But yeah, so a whole bunch of new Rebel stuff. Dave Filoni actually tweeted today was like his fists full of Star Wars Rebels action figures. The Sabine one wasn't in front, but I believe he had like 6 or 7. So
cool.
Those will be hitting the shelves nice and soon, in time for the show to get released.
Hold on to your wallets.
Yep, that Sabine is gonna go quick.
Your butts.
And
we've got a couple other things in Star Wars news too.
Yeah, also going with Rebels, there's been a bunch of rumors that Boba Fett's going to be in Rebels, which Again, I mean, not really.
There's no way he wouldn't be. Let's be honest.
Yeah, it's not really surprising. Like, if they're gonna have cameos by, you know, the big folks, like Vader is obviously gonna be in at some point.
Well, isn't BDW signed on as well?
He is. Billy Dee Williams did sign on, and I mean, if he's not Lando, also, he's related to someone named Calrissian, I'm sure. So,
I was about to say, if he's not going to do Lando's voice, he's going to be like
Lando's dad,
and Calrissian or something.
Yeah. So,
you know, I actually wouldn't have a problem with Boba Fett not being in Rebels, if only for the fact that we would instead see more Mandalorians that aren't Fett.
Yeah, it's true.
And we get some more custom canon Mandalorians to compliment Sabine.
It's true, but we do have to. I mean, we have to assume, like, I mean, Boba Fett was in. I mean, he's like still a little kid in the Clone Wars, but
this is when he's making his rep. Like, Boba Fett has become infamous during the Rebels period.
Yeah. This is true, yeah. So there should
Rebels
be some
is taking
cool
place, what, 4 years before the Battle of Yavin? Something like that?
Somewhere around there, yeah.
In and around that time frame, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah,
so
he'll be
26 by that point, so. Because he's born 30 years before the Battle of Yavin.
So. Yeah.
So, yeah, he should be in, and, I mean, we also gotta imagine, like, this show is gonna be successful. So, I mean, Clone Wars ran for 5 and a bit seasons, so we got time. We got time for Mandos.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
Dave Filoni knows what we want.
Dave Filoni better know what he wants. I think he actually, we gave him a helmet, didn't we? We gave him one of the MSCs.
We did, yes. Indeed.
Yes, we did.
No, he's a big fan of the Mandos.
Yeah.
You better be.
I can confirm this.
Well, Mandos were in the Clone Wars.
Yep.
So,
repeatedly.
Like, that on its own would be proof enough. If he hadn't physically told all of us. Just as a little bit of icing on the cake.
And I have to say, too, I mean, he even really did go out on a limb and develop a female Mandalorian character that's really great for those ladies who want to do a Lady Mando, so.
Well, absolutely.
Well, he's done two now, so.
Yeah, I mean, that's Bo and, well, I think that may actually be more proof that we need to get Filoni in armor, because, I mean, well, and that's the thing, is that we used to have a lot of complaints from people, from women, about not having any decent reference shots or any decent role models, because all of the important Mandalorians were men, because you had Jenga Fett and Bobbly Fett and Moantress. that was about it. And Master Jabril, I think, that guy. So you had all these dudes.
Muriel Jaster?
No, I'm pretty sure it's Master Jabril.
I thought it was pronounced Merle.
Oh yeah, it is pronounced Merle. You're right, it is Merle. Merle Jibble. So you have Bobbly Fett, Jenga Fett, and Merle Jibble. And Moantress. And now I would say that we probably actually have more strong female Mandalorian characters if you're excluding Jenga and Bobbly Fett. They probably have more screen time.
At this point, yeah.
Bo-Katan
is
like 3 lines.
Yeah, Bo's, I think, at pretty close to or slightly exceeding Boba Fett's screen time.
Well, Boba Fett's not on... He's on screen for 7 minutes?
Yep, so... truth be told, she's only in a couple episodes.
Yeah, but she has a lot of dialogue. I mean, Boba Fett only says 3 words, and Jango Fett has 1 dialogue.
Yeah, it's 1 bit, and he's not even wearing a helmet.
It's definitely getting a lot more proportionate in terms of male to female Mandalorians on screen.
Well, and let's be real here. I think Sabine's probably going to get a little bit of screen time.
Just a bit.
Just a little bit.
Just a bit. And other big thing for us anyway is, like, kids, again, they know who Sabine is already. Like, they know, oh, she's a Mandalorian. That's great. Like, I've seen this at a couple troops lately because of, like, Clone Wars and now Sabine, like, a kid will, like, see me out in armor, and they'll be, and, like, their dad will be like, oh, hey, look at Boba Fett. You want to get a picture with Boba Fett? Kid looks up at the dad and says, Dad, that's a Mandalorian. That's not
Boba
Fett.
And they have this excellent look of disgust on their face.
Oh, yeah. And I'm just like, yes, you, right here. You're getting a picture right now. You're getting a picture and a trading card.
Yeah. What I'm hoping is that and there was more coming up for Clone Wars.
It's
unfortunate that they chopped it. Especially more in the way of custom Mandalorians, which we've heard from numerous sources.
But those could very easily just be transplanted.
I was just about to say, I'm really hoping that those characters, or those designs at least, get transplanted and put right into Rebels.
Yeah.
Or at least the concept, some of the concepts.
Have I mentioned how happy I am that they're going to make the Inquisitor not in every episode? Like, not General Grievous?
Yeah.
Because that alone gives us two things. First of all, it gives us not villain decay. You know, he doesn't turn into Krillin.
Yeah.
Additionally, we're also, hopefully, as a result, going to get a lot more characters out of that. Because you're going to have, like, that one episode where Zuckuss and Forlom show up. And are chasing down the rebels. And are like, we're going to kill you and be bug people at the same time. And then we're going to learn all about the Gand and everything. You know, like, it's going to be great. And then we're going to have new characters who show up. You know, people like Dirge. But like Dirge, who is in a number of episodes in the animated Clone Wars series. But he was just straight up out of nowhere. And the only reason they brought him up was because they had a power vacuum. They needed somebody to go around fighting Obi-Wan Kenobi, who there was a suspense volume with.
Mm.
Because he hadn't been shown in any of the promo material for the next film.
Well, and that and stuff like that will also, I mean, the big thing everybody's still worried about is the, you know, nuking the canon. Like, that sort of thing is just fuel to get our beloved, terribly convoluted character and garbage-filled canon back. It's like, they can just throw, if they just need somebody in, like, they could very well, I mean, actually, they could. They could totally throw Dirge back in. If they really wanted to, because the series that he was in technically doesn't happen anymore. So he didn't die.
they didn't exactly kill him off in a very good way either, shooting him into the sun.
No.
Well,
so, I mean,
my understanding was that the cannon nuke only is post Jedi. It's not
it's a little
unclear still.
It's still unclear. But I'm just saying, like, if they wanted to bring Dirge back, they could. And no one would be mad.
Oh, it's Star Wars. Some diehard fan would be mad somewhere.
Yeah,
I will be mad. I will
rephrase. I will rephrase. No one who matters will be mad.
Oh, wow.
In other Star Wars news, we're getting towards a rumor mill sort of stuff, but for a while there was actually heard about this from one of the guys at work. There was a pretty solid rumor of Star Wars Uncut being a thing. They were basically going to re-release 4, 5, and 6, in the pre-special edition cut, like the original theatrical cut on Blu-ray.
Yeah. I had heard about that. I thought that was still a thing.
I thought that was just confirmed.
No, yeah. Well, it was confirmed to... It's still a rumor, because the main thing is that that specific cut, Fox still owns the distribution rights.
Ooh.
So it is something that could happen if Disney wanted to pull some strings and throw some money around. That could happen.
And Disney does have strings to pull on and money to throw.
Exactly. But
they just bought Lucasfilm.
Yeah. But they were, I mean, it was rumored that, I mean, if that was going to come out anytime, it was going to come out before holiday season 2015.
Not too much time left.
Not too much time for that. I mean, they could totally pull that out of their collective butts and do it, but I really don't think they will.
As long as they don't use the same commercial format as every other Disney movie where they say, now, for a limited time only, back from the Disney vault, Star Wars.
Well, it would be from the Fox vault. Because despite what Captain Lucas has told us, you know that film still exists somewhere.
Well, I mean, alternatively, if Fox has the distro rights for it, they can just do it themselves.
It's true.
Like, if they get, you could write a strongly worded letter to Fox and say, "Dear Fox, I want to have legit Star Wars pack. Please get thanks, bye." At which point, if we get, like, you know, 10,000 of those, they'll summarily ignore them. But if we get, like, 10 million of them, they'll probably actually do it.
Sure. But, I mean, as much as I would love for that to happen, that probably won't happen.
Fox can't even release all three because it gets a little convoluted here, but Fox owns the distribution rights to all three.
Mm-hmm.
But Fox owns the rights to A New Hope in perpetuity.
Right.
So Fox could release A New Hope uncut, but they can't release Empire Strikes Back or Return of the Jedi because they don't actually own the movies themselves, just the distribution rights.
Right.
So they're going to have to work together to figure something out.
That's
or
crazy.
Just release A New Hope.
Yeah,
it's a little silly.
I mean, they might just release A New Hope and then be like, see, Disney, look at all this money we're making. At which point, Disney is like, okay.
But you also got to remember, like, this is the sort of thing, like, there is one reason why there will never be an X-Men or versus Avengers movie, even though we would all go see that, like, three times.
I mean, it's really just going to be based on, I actually looked this up the other day, that's going to be based entirely upon when Disney decides that they want to go ahead and buy out Fox.
Pretty much. So both of those things, we will get our A versus X movie and our uncut Star Wars whenever Fox decides to be sold to the world's largest corporation.
As long as it's not A versus X in the Star Wars universe.
You're not the largest. The largest.
That's Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh, wait.
In other rumory news, the WWE wrestler Sheamus, Irish wrestler, has been rumored to be the physical presence of Darth Vader in at least one of the episode 7, which raises several questions.
If they're planning on keeping around our Lord and Savior, Mark Hamill,
mm-hmm.
then I could see them actually doing that because, first off, think about the cave, the swamp cave.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like if we're going to have crazy old Ben Luke Skywalker, who's going to be teaching people how to do things and stuff, which is very likely, judging by his excellent beard.
Yes.
Then we're probably going to end up with something similar to that, where it's going to be like, hey, look, now you get to go and face the most ludicrously overpowered character in the history of the universe, other than me.
Or just him still wrestling with the personal demons 30 years later.
You know? I mean, well, it could be that he goes into the Force Cave.
Who's wrestling? Sheamus?
Sheamus.
But you would have, like, him going into the Force Cave. Mm. With his apprentice or whatever, and it's supposed to be his apprentice's nemesis, and friggin' Darth Vader shows up and starts beating his apprentice into a pulp.
Yeah.
At which point, Luke is like, oh crap, I have daddy issues. Sorry. Yeah.
And that's where most of my questions come from. Like, personally, I'm cool with Sheamus being a Darth Vader. Like, I mean,
he already has
been. Yeah. Well, and like, in any, honestly, any big guy, because David Prowse was a bodybuilder, so anybody who can physically fill the suit and walk around in a very menacing manner and not run
and
into
stuff.
And
do a Welsh accent.
I don't know if Sheamus can or not. I've honestly never heard him speak. I don't know.
I do remember seeing a couple of the scenes that were voiced over, that were not dubbed, because they still have some of the original audio tracks for those.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
Darth Farmer.
I just remember it being like, I want them taken alive. Take them away. And you're all like, what?
Like, yes, we're pretending you're imposing.
Yeah. But, apparently Sheamus has already done some promotional work as Vader, right?
I believe he has. I think he's done some of the,
on some promotional tours, he played Vader, from what I can recall.
Yeah, yeah. I
don't know which tours they were.
Well, I mean, obviously, I'm sure they would be, tours over in the UK, over at Elstree, and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah. Might they be star tours?
They can be now. They own those rights.
The thing is, though, is the WWE has a pretty long history of doing all sorts of it is wrestling, so they're so big on the gimmicks, and they have done things in the past where they've claimed their wrestlers are doing certain things when they have absolutely no affiliation, just to sort of ride on the marketing and the rumor mill. So
I mean, yeah, it's possible it's still a rumor.
But he's already been Vader on promotional tours, so it's not like he's just randomly claiming, "Oh yeah, I'm going to be Vader, guys."
One thing that they have been talking about is Simon Pegg, who's just been floating around the Star Wars set for like the past year. He's not even, as far as we know, he's still not even in the movie, but he's just keeps hanging around the set.
Hopeful wanting.
He just like calls up JJ. He's like, "Hey JJ." And JJ's like, "Simon,
can I watch some filming today?"
Well, the latest
JJ, JJ, do you want me in your next Star Wars film? Yes, Simon. You're cast as one of the principal characters. We're gonna pay you like $30 million. Yeah, but I don't care about that. I'd like to be on the set, please.
Yeah.
Well, what he said in the latest thing is that his face. What Simon Pegg has recently said, and he, you know how people spin this, but he said his face won't be in Episode 7 because he feels it will, you know, detract from the movie and make people go, "Hey, wait a second, that's Simon Pegg in Star Wars," as opposed to, "I'm watching Star Wars and this is some character."
To be fair, I really do kind of want Simon Pegg to be in Star Wars, at least as a voice actor, preferably as a principal character, solely so that I can say that Scotty went back in time, or Scotty is actually from the past, and had killed a whole bunch of zombies, and then became a police officer. And having done those things, decided he was going to go ahead and travel back to the future, become the first officer, or not first officer, excuse me, the engineering officer on a rather important starship, which then fell through a black hole, launching them very far away, very far back in time.
No.
You've really put a lot of thought into this.
No, I haven't. I made that all up right now.
It's actually part of the...
It'd be cool,
he's
though.
Already posted, Eric has already posted this on the fanfiction section of the Merc site.
Yeah.
And if he hasn't at this point, you can go PM him and tell him to hurry up and
fair,
upload that.
Oh, God, don't tell them to do that. But to be fair, this is less screwy than the original Splinter of the Mind's Eye, so...
That is
one thing, is that with the whole canon reshuffle, some of the weird stuff gets put to bed.
Finally. Yeah.
Who knew that THX was, in fact, the progenitor of Coruscant?
But one thing, like, the Seamus thing, like, a little blurb that's been in on the Mirror, big UK publication, did say that he was in the area of filming. He was down around in the same area that they were filming certain scenes for a few days. And again, having been Darth Vader and having Simon Pegg tweet about Seamus being in the area, he does say that it's a pretty big coincidence, but that he can't confirm anything, pretty much just because of J.J. Abrams, but you know.
I wonder if J.J. just had a couple of scenes where Darth Vader, where Luke is sitting there trying to talk to people, and Darth Vader is literally just standing in the scene, just doing the breathing.
Yeah, even if it's just that.
As a Force ghost haunting him?
I would take that.
No, not even as a Force ghost. Like, it's like the modern interpretation of the sort of ghost where
so it's
you're
just
not
a
transparent and going, woo! And...
So it's just like sort of a hallucination.
Oh, so he's not making the Obi-Wan's Blu-ray crate dragon call when he's in the background haunting Luke?
Woo! Yeah, I don't think he'll do that. I think they've learned. The only other thing I've got is that they're supposed to be. I have nothing to back this up, but I've heard a rumor that they're like expanding the Star Wars section of Hollywood Studios, or just making a Star Wars park, sort of like the World of Harry Potter thing.
There's a couple of different rumors out there about that. One of the rumors is that at Hollywood Studios they're going to close down the Indiana Jones stunt show.
Oh.
And I know. And supposedly that was only supposed to be at Hollywood Studios for a few years, and that's been
there.
Yeah,
that's true.
It's yeah.
been there since it opened. But one of the rumors,
kind of like the Waterworld theme park.
If they're planning on taking down the stunt show, expanding out the area by Star Tours and adding a restaurant that's sort of themed after the cantina. There already is a restaurant right there in between Star Tours and the stunt show. So one of the things that was rumored was they were pretty much just going to recycle what they already had. So they were going to take that restaurant that's already there, turn it into a Star Wars themed restaurant, take the stunt show, turn it into a Star Wars themed stunt show. Apparently some of the executives from Disney went over to Harry Potter World and realized that just sort of recycling some of what they already had really wasn't going to cut it when down the road you have another attraction that has an entire immersive world that is built for fans of that genre. So what, from the articles that I've read and some of my friends who work at Disney, what they've been saying is it's kind of gone back to the drawing board because they've moved from, well, we're just going to kind of add a few touches here and there, to really looking at some kind of exciting possibilities for bringing more of the Star Wars experience in there.
I really hope they do that as well.
I want the Star Wars equivalent of Epcot and nothing less.
Yes. Well, because you
go and that, I mean, obviously that's my favorite corner of the park, next to the German beer garden. But
got Hoth next to Tatooine, next to Naboo.
Exactly.
Star Wars Weekends has really changed over the years. When we first started going 5 or 6 years ago, it was really, really just all over the entire park. There were characters everywhere. There were all sorts of different things going on. There was, of course, the parade, but there was a lot of things happening. There were a lot of activities. And in the past years, it sort of seems like they've kind of scaled it back. And I'm not sure if, you know, I don't know if that's happened for whatever reason that's happened, but even this past year, it doesn't seem like they did as much as they have in past years. So I'm really hoping that they will kind of ramp up the Star Wars activity there a little more.
Well, it's also probably a little bit of brand edge because Star Wars hasn't released a movie in, what, 2005 was the last one, so 9 years?
Yeah. The only thing I don't want is, yeah, if I'm glad that they're probably not doing this anymore, but Indiana Jones works really well as a stunt show. Because, I mean, it just fits. You know, it goes with that weird sort of pulp, you know, comedy, pulp movie sort of feel, that action-adventure feel. Yeah, of course there's stunts and stunt doubles and all the crazy contraptions and crap. That makes sense. The closest we come to that was, like, the factory on Geonosis in Episode 2.
Well, that would be kind of cool.
It would be
kind of... Well, and to be fair, they also do some of the other silliness. Like, for example, the generic slipping sound that they played when Boba Fett and... Like, there's some silliness in Star Wars. It's
there is.
Well,
it doesn't
do the whole Jabba sail barge.
They
like
could
the whole dive into the Sarlacc pit and everything else with Boba Fett. That'd be
they could.
It'd
but
be tragic
like,
for us Mandalorians, but
just it's the whole thing. It just doesn't fit.
Absolute tragedy.
Well,
making
and
fun
I
of
know,
darkest
maybe,
days.
Maybe Misha can tell me beyond the Star Wars night at Disney, the Star Wars Indiana Jones crossover of the stunt show that they did. Do they do that any other times? Do they do that on Star Wars Weekends?
No, so this past year, there was actually a little bit of an outcry because they got rid of a lot of the... Well, they changed a lot of what they did in terms of the shows. So in the past years, they had what was called the Hyperspace Hoopla, which was sort of a big dance party. And you've probably seen the videos of Boba Fett dancing and everything. This year, they didn't really do that. They did have DJ Lobot come out, and it was Lobot, and he was a DJ, but that was it. Some of the different guests, like Ashley Eckstein, like she came out and she hosted like a little trivia contest between some TKs and a family. There were some different events like that, but one of the things I noticed was this year they offered a special event that I believe it was either a dinner or a breakfast with the Star Wars characters. So you could go and pay an additional amount of money and have food with, say,
Lord Vader and some Stormies and Jedi Mickey.
Did Han Solo bust in midway through and start shooting up the dinner? Because no. I feel like that's a necessary part of that.
Han Solo never at Star Wars weekends.
He's in Carbonite.
He is never at Star Wars weekends other than in Carbonite. They, it's interestingly enough, yeah, he's never represented by a cast member there. So this year I didn't see any special shows. I heard that they had a pretty nice fireworks display, but that was really it. So they seem to be moving a little bit away from some of the comedy stuff.
Well, I think they might be trying to bring back brand legitimacy, because yeah. Again, they're trying to relaunch the series after 10 years of nothing. And it's exactly what they did with the Godzilla films, where they're trying to do away with that whole sort of all of the stigma that followed it around. Because let's be real here, everybody hated the prequels. And if people go into Star Wars 7 expecting the prequels, it's going to dramatically undersell whatever the current Marvel film is.
The prequels were not that bad.
No, I mean, that's true. But if you ask the internet, they're like, oh my God. Like, I mean, if you go look at Rotten Tomatoes, they're all like in the 70s, whereas all the other Star Wars films are in like the 90s.
Yeah, but 70s isn't even that bad.
At Star Wars weekends this year, for instance, a lot of people who had been able to do that parade in both the 501st and the Rebel Legion weren't able to do it this year. And part of the reason was because they cut a lot of the extended universe characters. Mm. So people who had, like, if you had a magma trooper, you weren't able to troop. And some of the other characters that weren't straight out from the films. And even, like, myself, I had to change my Jedi, because even though my Jedi was pretty much standard movie form, I had a little bit of green on my belt. I had a green band around my belt, and I had to take, and I had green on my pouches, and I had to take that off because they wanted only earth tones, so only things that were easily recognizable from the movies. And one
green
of
is an earth tone.
Yeah, well, since when is green not an earth tone?
Well, right, earthy, dirty
browns. They wanted
Tatooine tones.
Right, and we kind of heard that one of the reasons for that was because, you know, there were Jedis that were showing up in reds and blues, and people were not quite sure what was going on with that. But it really is brand legitimacy. If they're preparing for these new movies to come out, and they want to kind of get back to that recognizable things that some of us remember from our childhood, other people remember, you know, a little more recently, they really want to be able to see that recognizable identity.
Well, and I imagine that they want to go for that. They probably want to get that sort of feel back for the original series, where you have, if you remember in Empire Return of the hangar scene, where they have like 70 Marines or something lined up, and then they went back in and photo edited rows and rows and rows of stormtroopers in there.
Right.
They want to get like 90 fans to come out and be stormtroopers and march around and be like, hey, look, we're stormtroopers, yo. They don't want to have that sort of eclectic mishmash that you get even in the 501st. God, what must that have done to their CRLs? but they want to have, like, they want to have that real impressive 180 stormtroopers stomping around thing going on with a Darth Vader at the front being like, I'm big and black and Darth Vader. You know, they want to have that impressiveness coming mm-hmm. back, because they want to build hype, believe it or not, because they're trying to sell a movie.
That's one other thing. I'm sure you guys have all seen it. They released the pictures of the new Stormtrooper helmet.
Yep.
Yes.
I mean, not technically
the new Kia Soul. I mean, what?
I mean, yeah, they didn't quote unquote release pictures of it. You know, we just pictures of the castings in front of a bunch of other castings.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's not necessarily any of our problem, because we already have our helmets, and they're all pretty awesome.
About to say.
Yeah, but what did you guys think of those? Like, personally, I like it. I don't mind it.
Yeah, I think it looks good. I actually like the whole, because there's a lot of people who are like, it doesn't make sense that the black is going down to the face.
I'm sure it
does. And I'm like, totally does. Like, And there's all these people like, man, they don't rearm militaries every 20 years. And I'm like, sure I don't know, man. Digital camo has only lasted for like 15 years in our military. Like, they phased it in and now they're phasing it back out again because it's worthless. Like, the Empire, okay, so you decapitated the, you killed the Emperor. Okay, so does that mean the 10,000 Star Destroyers flying around with enough firepower to blow the crust off a planet are just going to go ahead and lie down?
Yeah.
Yes.
You know? Like, they're going to own a bunch of planets, guys. They own most of the universe, in fact.
Well, like, the only criticism that I saw that is kind of valid is that if somebody put a lineup of, you know, the four now clone trooper to stormtrooper helmets, you go, your phase one clone, your phase two clone, stormtrooper... this, it does kind of seem a little bit backward, because like if you look at the progression, it does look like you would want to go 1, 2, 4, 3.
Well, the only reason for that, I feel like the reason people have problems with that is because the clone trooper helmets have more black on them than the stormtrooper helmets do, because the stormtrooper helmets just have the eyes and that one band around the top.
Yeah,
and the visor is smaller.
Yeah.
Right.
But
I agree, but I still think that it's different enough from the clones and from the other TK that it looks almost like a combination of the two, and I think it'll stand out.
That's exactly what it is.
Well, the other thing
I like it. I like it a lot.
The other thing is, I think, and this, depending on who's writing, this might actually be something that they determined to go with, but they've got that whole tier imagery where they've got the black line coming out of the corner of the TK thing. And I was like, you know, that's actually a very interesting thing, because it would be very easy for anybody who comes in after Palpatine to paint Palpatine as a martyr.
Oh, yeah.
In the
destroyed EU, that's exactly what they do.
Yeah, well, and then additionally, it would be very interesting because you've got Luke who's being an Obi-Wan. But he's being an Obi-Wan for, like, this one kid. So unless this kid is somehow super special, that's not going to make, like, a whole lot of sense. So what if what you have is this thing where you've got Han, Luke, and Leia and all these people. They killed the Emperor. They won the day. They saved the universe. They gave the galaxy the chance it needed to stand up, and the galaxy didn't. You know, like,
I mean, that's basically what happens in the EU anyways, is that they go, okay, like, we beat the Death Star, now we have to...
Now we're going to fight a 15-year war.
Yeah.
Until we sign the peace treaty at Bastion.
Yeah.
You know, like...
So, I mean, maybe they keep that going. Or maybe maybe the rebels in the intervening 30 years have suffered an incredibly crushing series of defeats.
Yeah,
right. It'll be a split universe. To what percentages, we don't know, but
yeah.
Well,
it should be an interesting time. It's not going to be peace and pacifist Mando.
Or maybe they won. Maybe they won. And here's another thing. They could do this in 5 minutes at the beginning of the film. The rebels won. Yay. Excellent. Awesome. And then the Empire struck back like they do.
The Empire strikes back again.
Yeah. Well, like, everybody's all like, we're going to do rebels and everything, and we're destroying all these Imperial bases, and yay, and we forgot about the Star Destroyers.
Yeah.
At which point, the Empire comes back out of space and kicks the crap out of everybody.
That is that's one thing that I've always found really funny about the original trilogy. The rebels managed to blow up two Death Stars.
With more than a million people on them each time. Like, there's some sick mass murder going on here, guys. Just FYI.
Well, my thing is that they don't actually manage to successfully... They only manage to successfully destroy one Star Destroyer on film.
Yeah, yep. And it's...
I mean, it's the biggest freaking one, and it was by accident. Like, the closest they come is on Hoth, where they ion cannon that one Star Destroyer. But they just had to wait for the thing to, like, deionize, and then they just turned it back on.
Yeah. Well, and, like, that's another thing, is that and the thing is, they don't even destroy the Executor.
No.
The Executor flies into the Death Star.
Yeah, they wing it just so.
Yeah, it's basically Deus Ex Star Destroyer. Like,
yeah, well, I'm hoping we see a resurgence of
Deus Ex A-Wing, excuse me.
I'm hoping we see a resurgence of some of the themes in the EU, like the Maw and the Imperial military installations there, and also...
Well, let's be real
here.
I mean,
that's right up J.J. Abrams. That's right up his alley.
Let's be real here. There is one thing that JJ needs to do. And if JJ doesn't do this, JJ, I'm super disappointed in you. You need to bring back Mithra Naruto. That's what needs to happen. That's what needs to happen. Him and Admiral Paleon. And if you can do that for me, JJ, if you can say, we won, we beat everything, and then some guy from out in the middle of dead space with blue skin and red eyes showed up and beat all of us into a pulp, that would be great.
JJ, just
do that for me, okay?
The other thing we touched upon there was also the fact that, you know, it's this mass murder of people on the Death Star. Well, in the, I believe it's the Fate of the Jedi books, Luke has to be, kind of come to terms with the fact that, hey, he's kind of a mass murderer twice over.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, well, he's...
Technically once over, because he didn't personally destroy the second one.
Yeah, but, I mean, still, the guy single-handedly ended the lives of more than a million people.
Yeah.
I mean...
So, you know, bartenders, prisoners, a bunch
everybody.
Of Wookiees.
I mean, there's got to be a bunch of janitors, IT staff, wife and kids.
Oh, yeah.
Like, when you have something the size of a moon, like, it's going to be a self-sustained city. So
it's a gigantic flying military base. It's not just a tank.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's a small moon.
Yeah.
It's a small moon where every deck is, like, inhabited. So,
well, yeah, it's like everybody's played Tiny Death Star at this point. That's pretty much what it was.
Yeah, it's like SimCity, but in space with a super laser.
Yeah.
Like, so...
Think of how many Dianogas he's killed.
At least six.
That's a definite crime.
Yeah, I was about to say, that's a crime against Dianoga manity. But, squid manity? I don't know. But suffice to say, there's a lot of really interesting places they could take it.
Yeah.
And
we want to see all of them.
Yes, and we want to see all of them. JJ, make every one of them. Just make 7 Star Wars 7 movies. Yeah.
I know you're just going to do the one, but just do all of them.
Yeah, please. Better yet, just have Luke be insane. Like, have him just be crazy and Tyler Durden it up.
No.
And in a bed somewhere. No. And he's just going through all the different alternate realities. It'll be great.
Nah. But that's
and
our
that's
Star
why
Wars.
They have Darth Vader in it, because he runs around in a Darth Vader costume.
So that's boom. That's boom. That's our Star Wars news anyways.
Yeah.
But we do have some Facebook questions as well.
Yes. And most of these are because we have Misha on this month, a lot of these are going to be pretty much specifically directed at her. But we're all going to try our best to answer them.
All right, so the first question is from Abby, and she says, how great does it make you feel when little kids say, especially little girls, oh, look, it's a girl one? I don't know if any of you guys want to answer that one first.
I can only speak on behalf of... Well, actually, I can speak on that, because when I'm wearing my helmet, I've got long hair. So a lot of the time I just have it back in a ponytail, and that sticks out the back of the helmet, so I get a lot of people think I'm a girl from behind, crack.
I may have been guilty of that once or twice, sorry.
Hey, it happens. And, like, then people are like, oh, dude, oh, wow, I really like your costume, and then this voice comes out of the voice box. So, for me, I always find it funny. Especially with little kids, because they're just like, oh, that one's a girl, but it sounds like a guy.
I love it. I really... Not that Princess Leia and Padme aren't excellent role models, although, you know, I don't know. Padme, for me personally, leaves a little bit left to be desired. But when I'm trooping, and the little kids, especially the little girls, it's just so neat, because they tend to be, sometimes they're shy at first, but once they realize that I'm not scary or I'm not going to eat them or anything crazy like that, they get really excited to see a girl in armor. And it's neat too, especially when the parents bring them over and show them that there's a lady in armor. I actually have right now one of my coworkers, her daughter saw me at a troop, and she's building her daughter a set of Mandalorian armor. Yeah, and nice. Which I think her daughter's 6. And I just think that's the coolest thing.
It is the coolest thing.
That, you know, a little girl would see that armor and say, I want to do that. I can. And not just I want to do that, but I can do that. I just think that's so, so awesome.
Yeah.
So I guess the answer, Abby, is it makes me feel really, really great because I love that I can be out there in that armor and show really women of all ages that it's totally okay and cool for a girl to be out there in armor.
Awesome.
Yeah.
All right. Allison asks, how about any tips on chest armor shape? Still waiting for materials on mine, so not too late on if some designs work better for less squishing. I'm guessing that this relates to boob plates.
I'm going to say yes.
Yeah, that would be my best guess.
You're going to answer this one from your copious amounts of experience.
I believe it or not, I have a lot. but it really depends on you, because regardless, if you're making them yourself, you'll be able to find a way to make them comfortable if you sit there and you experiment with it long enough. I've seen people use mannequins. I've seen people do it out of aluminum. I've seen people use Sintra. People use whatever they want. And you can make it look however you want. It'll take time. It'll take a little bit of effort. And it'll probably take a little bit of dead materials. But if you want to go with the sort of boxier look like Bo's got, or if you want to go with the sort of classic, what's the name of that artist? The one who did the thick black line drawings of Murda getting married?
I don't know that artist.
I'm not sure either.
Yeah, I can't remember what those drawings are, but that's basically like boobs on metal.
Yeah, like the those ones, like
the legitimate boob plates.
Yeah.
If you want to do one of those, feel free to do it. Just you're gonna have to experiment. You're gonna have to find out what works for you, because everybody's different physically, and as a result, you're gonna have, you know, you're gonna fit into your plates differently.
All right. Like,
it's pretty simple.
Here we go, girl time. Okay.
Oh boy.
So first off, here's the deal. As you just said, everyone is different physically. So depending upon your physical shape, especially your chest and how endowed you are, that is really gonna have a lot to do with what shape of chest armor you wear. And you know, if you go onto the forums under the female armor resource area, there's a wonderful female armor resource thread that V did that has photos of several different types. There's the cupped style, there's darted, there's like more subtle, there's the really cool angular plates. So there's a lot of different options. And what I usually tell women to start with is they need to consider how they want to feel when they wear their armor, and whether or not, first of all, to me, the shape of your cups is determined by two things. One is definitely the look, but the other one is definitely your shape. So if you're a bigger girl in the chest, if you want to wear flat plates or more subtle plates, you can, but you have to understand that in order to do that, you're probably going to have to get undergarments that are going to flatten you out. And the truth of that is, that's fine if you're doing a troop for an hour, but if you're going to be in a troop that's a 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 hour event, like a con or something, you really need to sort of plan ahead and keep in mind that you may not want to have an undergarment on, like a sports bra that really flattens you out or something like that for an extended period of time. That's kind of the first thing. The other is just the look. I know some women that do not want to be identified as a female in their armor, and that's fine. And if that's the case, then I would not recommend any kind of curved shape, because as soon as you start putting on plates that are breast-shaped or cup-shaped at all, it kind of instantly screams, hey, I'm a lady. On the other hand, there are some people that are fine. I do not mind being identified as a woman, and in fact, I actually really like, again, I love it for people to see, like, oh, hey, a girl can wear armor too, so I don't mind being identified as that, but that's definitely something that you want to go with. And especially when it comes to those chest plates, you have to make sure that as you're shaping them, whatever undergarment you choose to wear is the one you're going to wear in kit, because that actually can have a huge difference on how your plates fit.
Yes.
Sorry, boys.
No, it's totally cool.
Yeah, it's all good.
And just to add, like, especially if you do want to either walk the line of, you know, overtly female or not, like the angled plates are usually a pretty good way to go. My wife wears those with her kit, and she gets about 50-50, because, I mean, she's short and girl-shaped, so in general, she's not exactly hiding that with her design, so, I mean, so a lot of people say, okay, that's definitely a girl, but she gets mistaken for a dude just as often as I get mistaken for a girl. So, especially if you don't want really flat or really subtle plates, those are a pretty good way out, because you can almost make them, like, you can almost get, like, the Stormtrooper visual effect going on with that.
The next question comes from Avery, and they ask, how did you decide on what shape to make the chest plate? I know I'm still stuck between a few different versions, so I think that mostly plays into what Misha had just previously stated.
Yeah,
in terms of what factors come in and on what shapes you can go with, depending on what you're working with,
well,
so to speak.
Well, yeah, and what, I think specifically, like, what made you decide to go with the bow style plates?
Honestly, it had to do with my physical size, because I've been for over 10 years now, I've been building my own costumes for dance, and I am well aware of what I am and am not going to fit into. And the original armor that I had ordered, when it came, there was no way. Not only was there no way that I was going to fit into it, but it was one of those situations where it was not even close. And when I saw the bow style cups, I knew that even if they came and they were a little bit small, I could very easily cut them, bondo them, and work. As it happens, I was really lucky because Hydra and I were very similar in shape, so the one she sent fit perfectly. But in the two, I'm actually working on two kits right now, and both of them, I'm still making for them more of the round side, the round shaped plates, because for me, that is the most comfortable thing to wear.
Cool.
Yeah. Well, and I know that there's also a number of different things. It's not just the plates that factor into this. It's not just your underwear. Sometimes it's the soft parts too. The way in which your vest fits you will have a dramatic impact on how the plates work. Because I know that some of the older female sets, there were some women who were relatively well endowed who were actually able to get away with smaller boob shapes because their vests were designed such that they only cinched in over the shoulders and then at the waist, and as a result that allowed the vest to sort of buckle out a little bit at the middle and they would dart under the elbows, and what that would do is it would allow them to put whatever plates they wanted onto those, and it was less of a consideration. So there's lots of design hurdles, basically, and you're gonna have to figure out what is best for you.
Yeah, it definitely applies to guys too, because like if you're trying to shape your chest armor just wearing a t-shirt,
that ain't gonna work.
You're gonna need to put on your flight suit and your vest, especially if you have like a relatively thick material, like a thick pleather or real leather or like some kind of heavy fabric.
Yeah, well, I know I have to reshape my plates pretty much every time I change jackets that I wear under them, which is often. So that's gonna be a factor for everybody, but that is something to always look into. So if you're worried about trying to make your boob plates fit adequately, you're gonna have it's a synergistic thing, you know.
Synergy, thinking outside synergy. The box and buzzwords. And...
Yeah. So obviously, Misha's gonna be the expert.
And really, I'm going to go ahead and say that it's much better for your the cup size to be too big
yeah.
than for it to be too small.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Because you know, I totally get what you're saying about, well, you can use a vest, and if the cups are a little too small, like, you can make it work. Yes, but I'm going to say that eventually stuff starts moving around and jabbing you and becoming uncomfortable pretty quickly. So I would recommend, you know, if you can, try not to err on the size of too small. Because, again, if you... whatever you want your, whatever you're going with for chest armor, you do want it to look like it's going to cover you and protect you in some sort of fashion.
And you can always, if it's too big, then you can always trim. It doesn't work the other way around.
Yep.
You can always trim, and then there's lots of tricks that the ladies know.
The next question, again, sort of could apply to all of us, but I'm pretty sure it's definitely definitely for Misha. Kevin asks, do you find people react differently to you in armor than in other styles of costume? Was it tough finding research material when designing your kit?
So the armor, again, I was really lucky because Hydra helped out a lot with that. And when it came to putting it all together, there weren't too many Lady Mandos at the time, and so I just sort of
made it up.
An idea in my head and made it up. There's even now there's not a lot of reference material out there. So and I hear that a lot from ladies that say, you know, there really isn't a lot of reference material, for the girls. And in a way, though, that's okay, because that means that you really are free to explore and get really creative with it.
Yes.
As far as people reacting differently to me in armor than other styles of cosplay, you know, not really. It's not like, oh, I have armor on, people are going to steer clear out of my way. Not so much. A lot of people really enjoy the armor. I don't know if... I know there's been a lot of talk lately about some of the over-sexualization of cosplay and things like that. Certainly, if you are wearing a cosplay that's a character or any costume, and I'm going to say it this way, because, again, as a professional dancer and as a professional belly dancer who's been performing for over 10 years, our costumes are made to show off the movements that we do. And when we perform, at best, our audience is looking at the work we do as an art and as a cultural and traditional expression. At worst, people see, you know, they might see some really negative things, and they may see us as something that's just there for their entertainment. But in wearing that costume, I understand that that could happen. And so I haven't necessarily had people react more respectedly to me when I'm in my armor versus other types of cosplay. It's not so much that. I think it's just... either way, no matter what I'm wearing, I tend to be mentally prepared for people to just, you know, either be really excited about what I'm wearing or not. It usually just doesn't faze me, I guess. That probably didn't answer that at all. But I guess the answer is, I mean, not really. I've had people get just as excited about me in armor as they have when I've been, you know, not in it.
So the next question, Raymond asks, why the female style helmet when the Mandalorian culture is all about unisex and not having gender roles and stuff? Yeah. Well,
I would say it's just because the helmet's seen as being worn by Bo-Katan doesn't necessarily make it a female style helmet.
There are a few guys who wear those.
Yeah. There are some males in the works that wear the helmets, including
I thought Cam had one.
Yeah, I think he does.
Yeah, I thought Cam had one that he wore.
And actually...
and there was a guy that just moved from Nexu Clan over to Washington area who's got one, and I think there's one or two others.
And it's also worth noting...
you're wrong.
Like, yeah, if you're actually... if you watch the Clone Wars and you look at the Night Owls splinter group, there are dudes in the Night Owls wearing Night Owl helmets.
Yeah.
So...
the takeaway lesson from this is that...
It's the Night Owl helmet. It's one of the helmets that exists, just like the Demogorgon and the Roland Dyer helmet. Yeah. Many people of any of whatever gender their species has wear said helmet. So,
and it was kind of popularized, I guess you could say, by a female. Interestingly, not the one that he mentions, not Sabine.
Yep.
It was popularized by Bo-Katan. And a lot of women are drawn to that, which I think is really wonderful, because that gives them something that they like, that is opens the door to them to be able to be involved. Because it does have, I mean, you could argue that it does have sort of a feminine look to it, but I've seen plenty of different styles of helmets that were historical helmets that were very similar that men wore. So
yeah, it's really similar to like an ancient Greek hoplite helmet. I'm pretty sure that was the design influence for it.
Definitely was.
Which was worn back then exclusively by men.
Well, yeah, and... well, it wasn't always in the Greek times. I mean, they had... Mostly. Anyways, that's a historical thing.
Yeah, that's something else. But yeah, take away, dudes can wear the Night Owl and look good.
Dudes can wear the Night Owl and they look just fine, and women very clearly wear the Boba Fett helmets.
Yeah.
And look just fine.
Yeah.
So, really, it's not a gender issue. It's people who like the curvier helmet. Also, does Sabine wear the Night Owl helmet?
Yeah, it's a variant of a Night Owl.
It's a variant of it.
Yeah, it's a variant.
Okay, so it's probably going to be called the Sabine helmet at some point.
At some point, yeah.
Yeah.
So, okay. Suffice to say, I don't think that's as big an issue as somebody made it out to be.
Yeah.
All right, yep. Next.
And the next question comes from Seth, who asks, who or where is the best place to go to buy a good quality painted helmet? And to that, we will direct Seth to the Mandalorian Mercs forums, particularly the Trading Station section, where you can find both helmet vendors and also potentially people willing to paint or sell you a finished painted helmet. Although I would advise to purchase it yourself and then paint it yourself, as you get more pleasure and enjoyment and... not so much bragging rights, but the good feeling of being able to say, yes, I painted that myself.
Well, that, and well, you can also paint
is
easy.
Another thing. If you can't paint it yourself because you don't have the confidence or you don't think you have the ability, buy the helmet and take it to your local armor party if there is one. Now, admittedly, I know there are some regions where there aren't, but we're actually really big now, so there's probably an armor party you can get to within the next 2 months or something. So if you can't, take your helmet to that armor party. At the very least, someone will give you great advice and will teach you how to do stuff.
Mm.
And they might even help you. They might even give you free paint. Because if there's one thing in the Mercs that we believe in, it's, you know, sort of the oral tradition where we pass on our skills and knowledge to new members.
It's kind of like what we're doing right now.
Yeah. And so... get the helmet and take it to an armor party. You can literally walk in there with a blank helmet and be like, guys, I have literally no idea what to do. And someone in the armor party will be like, oh, I've done that before. Let me give you a hand. And then that'll happen.
Yeah.
And then you'll know how to do it. And so when somebody else does that to you in 5 years, you can be like, I know how to do that. And then you can help them. And so that's my suggestion. Now, if you really don't have time, just go find people who sell painted gear and be like, hey, can you paint this for me? I'll pay you a large amount of money.
And so, then someone will do it.
You throw enough money at it.
Yeah, the answer is check the trading station. We've got a variety of vendors and whatnot there. You should be able to find someone able to help you.
You can find anything. You can find anything at all on our trading station.
So Paige writes, hell yes, question. How in the world do I make the chest pleats accommodate the girls? I don't have a dress form or anything, and I can't figure out how to get the curvature right at all. So a heat gun and some Sintra, which if you're in my area of Florida, they don't sell Sintra, but they do sell PVC board. A heat gun and some good old Sintra is your best friend, and something round that you can shape it over. Remember that when you're trying to make something flat have curves, cutting into it and shaping it like having darts in it works really well. We recently picked up a plastic welder which has been amazing at allowing us to cut into a flat piece, shape it over a round object, and then kind of weld it shut and then Bondo over it. So all of those are options. You don't have to worry if you don't have a dress form. You can actually make a form of yourself, a duct tape dummy. So if you go to our forums under that armor resource thread I mentioned before in the ladies section, I believe there's a link to that. So you can always do that. And the curvature, a lot of that is trial and error. Once you get one set, you can usually match the other one to it. But again, I really want to emphasize, when you're doing that, whatever bra you're going to be wearing, or sports bra, but I recommend a regular bra, whatever bra you're going to be wearing to wear that kit needs to be the one that you wear when you shape those plates. Because hopefully every lady knows that, you know, whether you're wearing one that is more of a push-up versus more of a sports bra, that is really going to affect your shape and really will do different things with your cups. I know that because the very first time I got everything ready, got the Velcro sewed on my vest, got everything ready to go. When I tried it on, it was great. And then I put it on again and the difference was unbelievable. I mean, it was crazy. And I had just switched undergarments. All I had to do was switch back to what I was wearing the first time and it fit fine again. But I can't emphasize that enough. So definitely make sure you're careful about that. Gentlemen?
No, I think that...
Nothing to add.
I think that pretty much covers that. Not really... Because, I mean, I'll be honest, I'm pretty flat-chested, so I don't really have any of these problems.
I'm sure I really run into that one.
I've had a couple friends tell me that they've used, like, glass bowls. One of my friends told me that they had, like, this... Tupperware, or not Tupperware, but like a serving, like a chafing dish that had a handle on it, mm-hmm. that was nice and round, and they shaped the bra cups over that. I know one cosplay friend of mine has had really good luck in using styrofoam balls, like the halves of styrofoam balls you can buy at the craft store. You have to be careful with that, of course, because they could potentially melt. And of course, if you're a larger lady, you know, you're going to have to make do. But one thing that I can recommend in building other costumes, what I've done in the past is actually done it in layers. So you don't have to worry about getting this perfectly round shape or half round shape for the entire breast. You can do like the lower part up to the mid range and then use a rectangle above it to get the full shape if you're very, very full. And all the guys are quiet and trying to picture how that would work, but...
Well, yeah. I've seen one of the guys up here, he actually primarily uses it to make knees, but he has, like, just a steel shot put that he had left over from high school. And
yes.
He uses that to do, he uses that to do curves on, like, the boba-style knees. It's big and it's heavy and it's metal, so, I mean, you do not need to worry about hurting it, so you can totally use that to put complex round curves on pretty much anything as well.
Yeah, really, if you can get a circle, if you can get a and I've actually been experimenting with doing this off of a bra that is the right size for me. If you can get a circle of Sintra and dart it, get it to dart, cut into it and dart it, and then heat it, and get it round, you can actually use that for the bottom part of the cup, and then you can take a rectangle and heat it up so that it will be a sort of curved band over the top, and then you bondo the two together. And it
There's another style that doesn't even use curvature at all. It doesn't do three-dimensional curves. And it's not the bokeh templates. I've only ever seen two or three people do it, but it's where, you only do one plane of curve. I've seen a bunch of amateur metal workers do that, and then you basically glue the plates together, and it works great for Sintra. It looks kind of like TK chest plates when you're done with it.
If
you don't have any of those things, you could try that.
There's also Legacy. Legacy is a great option for people who either aren't quite sure how to do the chest, or maybe they don't want that round look, or maybe they have more that they have to accommodate, that's a really nice option too, because you can, it can either be, you know, a little curved or not quite that much, or however much you want to make it, and you still can wear it quite easily. And again, all of these are, there's examples of all of these on our forums under the female armor resource thread.
Christine asks, did you find it difficult to join an organization that was mainly male predominant? How do you encourage other females to join the ranks of the Mercs? So yeah, how hard was that?
Oh, boys are so awful. So the first thing I have to say is I don't think I've ever encountered a nicer group of people that just right off the bat were so incredibly warm and welcoming and just ridiculously nice. I mean, seriously, the Mercs were just such nice people. I have a little bit of an advantage because in my day job, it's very male dominant. I work in the government, so in some ways it is a boys' club. And specifically in my field, which is the environmental resources, land management, it's a lot of guys. And so I've gotten kind of used to having a bunch of coworkers that are at times big brothers and at times not, you know, and at times, sometimes I think they kind of look at me thinking, you know, what on earth do you know? You're a girl. And I can totally see how people might think that sort of attitude would be in the Mercs too, but it's not. And what I love about the Mercs is, you know, women get involved in this for a number of different reasons. I have always loved Star Wars ever since I was a little girl. I still have all of my Star Wars action figures in very good condition, you know, in all nice, tidied, packed up. I mean, I loved the movies. I remember going and seeing some of them in the theater when I was a wee child, and it's really where my heart is. So I didn't get into it like some people do, where it was something their significant other was doing and they kind of got dragged in. I went into it, heck yeah. like, are you kidding me? There are people that make armor? Let's do this. So when I came into it, I was shy, but I don't think I was as hesitant as some people who might just be doing it because, you know, a significant other is doing it. And when I went to Celebration, when it was in Orlando a couple years ago, I went up to the Mercs booth and I kind of very timidly, because I didn't know, I was afraid that people would say, oh, you know, your armor isn't good enough, or, you know, we don't want you here. And boy, was I surprised, because I think there may have only been like one or two girls there, but oh, the guys that were there were so nice, and they were so welcoming. And I distinctly remember Point of Origin in particular spent a good bit of time talking with me, and I just remember going away from that experience thinking, I don't even know these people, and they were so nice. And that was, you know, I really got into the organization. And as I've gone from just being somebody who was a member and occasionally trooped to sort of getting more and more involved, I have found that doesn't change. The guys that are in this organization are really kind and really excited to get girls involved, and not because of some skeezy, you know, reason, because they're looking for a date, but because they really love this and they're really excited to share that joy with other people.
It's also worth pointing out that yesterday, for us, August 26th, we just welcomed 8 new people into the club. 5 of them were girls. So it's really not that hard.
it's
a boys' club.
Yeah.
It's not a boys' club, and it is funny. One of the reasons, a friend of mine said to me the other day, he said, it's someone I've known for a very long time, and he said, I think it's really funny that you have this sort of online presence of being this glittery fairy creature, because that's not entirely true. And it's, and he's right. I definitely have some other not as friendly aspects, but, and I've never considered myself a girly girl or anything like that, but I know that some of the ladies that come into the Mercs, they either don't want to be identified as feminine, or they really associate more with the idea of being, you know, very, very strong and very much a warrior, and not necessarily, you know, at all girly, if I can use that word. I don't know a better way to say it. And that is fine. That's great. And there's a place for that. But there also is very much a place for the ladies who, you know, they're okay with associating as nope, I'm a female and I'm also here in armor. And, you know, I'm just as deadly as everybody else. And I love the fact that most of the people in the Mercs are open to both. And I would say, you know, how as far as encouraging other females, the way I do that is my door is, I'm probably going to regret saying this, but my door is always open. I have a Facebook page and I get questions on that all the time about how do you do this or how do you do that? And I always answer them. And on the forums, whenever I get messages, I always try to answer them too, because people were there for me when I had questions. And I still want to ask questions. And so I'm always happy to answer anything that I can to pass on knowledge. You know, it's a big thing to always constantly improve. I got my kit approved, and then about a year and a half later, I had made enough upgrades to join the brigades, which to me was, you know, that was a huge goal for me, because to me that's the higher level of kits, and I really wanted to be a part of that. So I'm always happy to help people, you know, kind of with their goals and help them with their kits. It's not a big scary boys club, and I think that I really would love to see more girls in it, because it just, everybody's just so nice. Like, can I say that 20 more times? I really, there are people in this organization that are in other countries that I've never met that I consider family. I mean, that's just how amazing the people in this organization are. And I really can't speak highly enough of it.
Sweet.
Yeah. Ooh.
So.
Mercs for life?
Yeah.
I'm not going to get the tattoo, though. Sorry. I'm not going to get the Mercs for life lower back tattoo that I know some of you guys have. Yeah, I'm just, I can't.
Hey, don't you poke fun. Crazy, don't you poke fun.
You'll have to talk to Tom and Alicia about it if you want to get it. They have the vector. They have the vector file for it if you want it.
Alright, so that is about all the time we have for this month's edition of Keldabi Talk Radio. I'd like to thank Misha for being a lovely guest and devoting her time to do this. Also, just on behalf of Thaxos, Frost, and myself, and also now Misha, thanks for listening, and tune in next month.
Bye. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
This has been a production of the Mandalorian Mercs Costume Club. If you'd like to learn more about the topics discussed on today's show, please visit www.mandalorianmercs.com. The Mandalorian Mercs is a worldwide Star Wars costuming organization comprised of and operated by Star Wars fans. Star Wars, its characters, costumes, and all associated items are intellectual property of Lucasfilm. Copyright 2009 Lucasfilm Limited. We hope you enjoyed our show, and we'd love to hear your feedback. Please email podcast@mercs.firespray.net. Until next time, happy hunting.